Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. How are you guys all doing after a big weekend of 1872 Cup action? We are back to dissect that and look forward to what could be one of the biggest dead rubbers in Scottish rugby history this weekend. As ever, I'm joined by Alan and Matt. Alan, how are you doing, pal?
Good. Feeling invigorated post-first 1872 Cup game.
Surprisingly good 1872 Cup game, as you said.
I actually, on reflection, I think potentially I was just so excited that rugby was back. My expectations of how bad the game would be probably meant that just even a try in that first 40 minutes was meant that the game went ahead of my expectations. But, you know, it was all right. It was pretty good. A couple of absolute worldly tries. So you don't see that very often.
It was. And we will get into talking about those later on. But Matt is also here. He's just about to fly out with Harry Maguire's legal team to the Greek islands to get him home. How you doing, pal?
Yeah, I'm good. I was just looking at that bar bill that's been doing the rounds. I don't think my holiday is going to quite live up to that. You know, not even one. I don't think I could even afford one of the steaks that he was buying, the tomahawk steaks.
It was five steaks for £540. That is going some.
I mean, they saw him coming, clearly. That is an absolute roast.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are going to be getting into a couple of bits of news items that have come out, Pro 14, and also looking forward to Friday night and the Murrayfield Test event. And then we'll look back at the 1872 Cup as well. And we've got a little bit of a quiz. Before we get there, big thank you to everybody who subscribed to our brand new newsletter. So that went out first thing Monday morning. Thanks to hundreds of you who've signed up and hundreds more have signed up since seeing episode one. So we absolutely thank you so much for your support on that one. If you haven't seen it yet, get on to Substack. It's Substack, and there's type in Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, and then you'll find our new newsletter. You'll be able to sign up, pop your email in there, and it'll be with you every Monday morning. And it's just a little bit of a fun take on Scottish rugby every week, much like you get in the podcast, but in your inbox. So Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, get on there, and that's good. So administration done. Speaking of administration, the Southern Kings have gone into administration. Alan, what does that mean for the Pro 14?
Yeah, I guess because you've got sort of two pieces of news today. You've got the one which is, the greatest rugby club in the world has sort of gone into administration, or at least won't be sort of competing in 2020. And then at the same time, the sort of CEO of the Pro 14 has come out and said that, you know, due to COVID restrictions, kind of in and out of South Africa, basically none of the South African teams are going to sort of participate in the Pro 14 until at least 2021. So, and they've sort of said that they're going to sort of rejig the league accordingly, which sort of leaves it quite vague. But yeah, ultimately, I guess the season is starting in early December. So I guess it kind of gives them that that flexibility to, if things do improve, potentially sort of have South Africa teams kind of coming in January, February, and sort of having to sort of fill in matches in sort of spare weekends. But I think you kind of get the sense that with everything that's happening in Super Rugby, that the South African kind of rugby union in general is sort of looking at what it can do either on a more domestic front or kind of wider across Europe. So I don't think, I would be very surprised if we're in a position in January or February and the Kings and the Cheetahs have just returned to the Pro 14 as normal.
How many games do you reckon the Kings have won in their Pro 14 history out of 55 matches in total?
And you know the answer?
Yeah.
Well, one against Glasgow. Is it not? Or Edinburgh? I can't remember.
Glasgow and Edinburgh, actually.
Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Yep.
Let's go with six.
What are you saying, Dave? What do you reckon?
Less than that, five.
You're both wrong. It's four.
Four?
Yeah.
God.
How were Edinburgh and Glasgow two of the opponents?
I know. They make up 50% of their victories. Of course they do.
I remember the Glasgow loss.
Yeah. No, I remember that. I remember sort of the late loss at the end. There was something always so depressing about sort of Kings matches. And, you know, I know a lot of the Pro 14 games aren't getting a lot of fans in, but there really just was not much enthusiasm for the Kings in Port Elizabeth. Like, I don't think, when Zebra were rocking into town, literally not one person was giving a flying fuck.
Did the South African, were the South African teams like really important though to the Pro 14s, the commercial viability of the competition?
I know that they've said kind of repeatedly that SuperSport, who's kind of obviously the Sky version in South Africa, had paid obviously for the rights, and that had added a significant amount of revenue into sort of the pooled pot. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see, because I imagine, you know, SuperSport A are probably going to be sort of claiming back for rights that they haven't received this year, and then I imagine the Pro 14 will be sort of in negotiations with SuperSport sort of at the moment to try and kind of manage that, because, you know, I imagine a lot of these things are based on assumptions that SuperSport were going to be paying whatever it was, sort of 10, 12 million pounds in sort of 2021.
So I suppose that makes it relatively likely that the Pro 14 will still look to add teams rather than be happy with maybe a Pro 12, as some people on our Twitter were suggesting today.
Yeah, you think so? I mean, it feels like they've always felt this need to grow the number of countries and number of teams. There's never felt like the Pro 14 have been comfortable with the current state of the league. However, it just feels that at the moment, anyway, outside of South Africa, there isn't really, I know there's some stats about it, sort of Georgia and Romania, we've obviously mentioned Argentina, but ultimately the great thing that the South African teams brought was TV money. And actually what Georgia, Romania and Argentina bring is additional teams and no additional money, which is kind of the exact opposite of what a lot of those teams need. So it feels like potentially, unless it's a South African team, it would be very unlikely that you'll have any additional teams next year.
Well, we will see. I mean, I think obviously the Argentinians, there was talk of them basing themselves in Spain, which would be
very, very good for an away trip when such things are allowed to happen again. But we will see how the Pro 14...
Mendoza away next year.
It's like the difficulty of Argentina is just like the other benefit that South Africa brought is time zone. Just like it's not that difficult to go down to South Africa, whereas like traveling to Argentina is an enormous difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that bad. I mean, broadly, I don't know if you can get an overnight flight from kind of Edinburgh to South Africa, but I mean, you can obviously get an overnight flight from London to Argentina, and they're only like, what, 4 hours behind? So actually, like, even closer than sort of your New York. So I actually think a lot of people probably assume that Argentina's got kind of a worse time difference than it actually does.
I am representing a lot of people in that case. Well, let's move on from that for the time being. We will keep an eye out on that and see if we're playing the Super and the Pro 12, 13, 14, or however many teams they rustle up for next season. Other big bit of news, and obviously we'll get into this when we talk about the match coming up on Friday, that Murrayfield is hosting fans on Friday night for Edinburgh versus Glasgow. 700 to be exact. There'll be 1,000 people in the stand, about 300 support staff, and I think the sort of corporate partners and things like that as well, making out the rest. But 700 bona fide Edinburgh rugby fans are going to be in there at Murrayfield, all sort of coming from the immediate area, which is interesting because the United City is now being divided up by Edinburgh rugby, which, you know, I just didn't think we'd see that.
I think citizens of Murrayfield are quite happy with that, actually. I think they consider themselves a separate caste, as it were.
Speaking as the Laird of Murrayfield himself, you're very happy with the outcome.
Oh, well, I don't live there anymore, so I couldn't possibly comment.
But I mean, it's a significant step forward, and I suppose a huge responsibility for, I guess, the SRU and the Scottish rugby public to have this quite sort of enormous event coming. And if it all goes wrong, that could set back sort of other sports and rugby from getting fans back as quickly as possible. So it is, while the game itself, and we'll come on to talk about it, may not mean that much in terms of league positions or points, it is quite a significant event.
Yeah, I mean, I think just kind of reviewing what's happening, I think it's the first stadium to have fans back in the UK, potentially. So it's clearly, you know, they've obviously got like a pretty good setup, and they seem to have a really good relationship with the Scottish government, like way more than any other sort of sporting institution in Scotland. And I did read something that I think that because the sort of, you know, kind of the areas you walk around to get into your kind of section of the stand are kind of obviously like open rather than fully enclosed. So it almost makes it kind of better from like a health and safety perspective. So finally, the design of Murrayfield is actually benefiting someone. it'd be good. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to be like if you're a spectator. I don't know if everyone's going to have to like wear masks for the whole game and no chanting.
Can you think of an Edinburgh chant?
Edinburgh. I don't know. I'm sure there's some rogue chants that we've sort of missed over the years. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
There was a chunk song back in the day, but I can't remember how it went. I'm sure someone will still know it.
Well, there was always that Black Eyed Peas song called Chunky, and I always remember there was a great YouTube compilation of Alan Jacobson to the song Chunky by Black Eyed Peas.
That is a great video.
Wow, but it is very, very, very exciting. I don't know what the situation is with masks and things like that. You'd think if they're outside, maybe once they're in the bowl, they won't have to wear them, but perhaps when they're coming in or something like that, they will. But I think there is a ballot that's gone out to it's favouring Edinburgh Rugby season ticket holders. in the first instance, and you've got to live in the fairly immediate area around Murrayfield. But 700 fans. It's going to be very, very strange. I mean, I think the much made joke online is that it won't be very different from any other Edinburgh rugby crowd. But 700 people in a 65,000 person stadium, in some ways, is almost worse than having no fans in at all, because there'll be this sort of like dull, quiet noise in the background, but it will sort of not really resonate. It'll be very, very strange.
I'm sure I saw somewhere that all fans will be in the East Stand.
Right.
So at least there's sort of like, it's not, 700 divided by 67,500. So it's like, it's not like it's like you get 100 seats per person. I think it is going to be sort of at least semi-contained in sort of one area. It would be quite funny if they literally just put like each single person with a sort of 100 seats around.
Someone in like double Z in like the top of the West Stand, absolutely miles away.
But I think it's all going to be contained to one stand. So at least within that area, there'll be probably sort of like mild level of atmosphere.
Put that on your posters. Come along for a mild level of atmosphere. Well, we will get onto that as we preview the game later on in the pod. But before we get there, we've got the small bit of business of the 1872 Cup from the weekend. It went, if you don't already know, the way of Edinburgh, fairly convincingly in the end, 30 points to 15. Nick Groom with a brace for Edinburgh. Pete Horn scoring for Glasgow. I can't remember who got the third try for Edinburgh.
Charlie Shiel,
of course, an absolute worldie from the young man. Alan, we already had your sort of top line thoughts right at the beginning. Matt, what was your take on the game?
Yeah, I think it was kind of a bit of a slow start, as we had pinpointed last week, just because, you know, the teams are rusty, and it was pretty apparent from the start that the referees have had these new directives on the breakdown, which I get. It's clearly, you know, it's zero tolerance at the moment, and they're saying they're stall out to improve things, but it did just completely kill the kind of the flow of the game for, I'd say, the first like 20 minutes or so. But then after that, it sort of became, you know, for 50 minutes or so, like a pretty good contest. And I thought that Glasgow were actually, for parts of that, better than I thought they'd be. But just as the game went on, as Edinburgh were able to bring on, you know, Schumann and Bergen as their front row subs, Glasgow's bench didn't really have that much of an impact, and the game just completely fell away from them. So Edinburgh were deserved winners in the end, but I felt there was, you know, Glasgow can be pretty pleased with at least the sort of first portion of the match.
Yeah, I think we even spoke about it. I think a lot of the stuff, especially in the forward pack that we discussed in last week's pod, sort of came to fruition, where it felt, you know, even for the first sort of 50-55 minutes, that the two front fives were relatively well matched. And there was even sort of periods where, you know, Glasgow looked like they were a little bit on top or out in kind of the tight areas. And then probably that Edinburgh back row just kind of slightly edged out that Glasgow back row, especially around the breakdown, which, given kind of you have like Matt Ferguson at seven, is pretty to be expected. And then, yeah, just felt as the game went on, and especially as the kind of replacements came on, there just became this kind of golfing class between the two teams that ultimately just sort of, you know, gave Edinburgh kind of a pretty healthy, relatively sort of easy win at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, that was a big moment of clarity for me, of sort of the way Edinburgh's sort of strength and depth has developed, when they could hook their full front row, leaving Rambo on, obviously, and bring on players of Schumann and Bergen's quality. And it just felt that when Glasgow went to the bench, it just wasn't there. I thought Adam Hastings had a fairly disappointing outing, which is a shame after his his sort of top form in the Six Nations just before we all went away on holiday. Did you think that Jaco van der Walt was the man of the match? Because I didn't.
I think he very much benefited from his forward pack getting the upper hand over Glasgow's. You know, he's like a, you know, a good solid player who is a good goal kicker as well. But I feel that particularly in attack, he just doesn't, you know, offer that threat in terms of being able to break the line. And he also just, the way he plays is so deep. He's almost, when he gets the ball, and I saw this when at Edinburgh, we're trying to put some phases together. He either kind of stands still or like almost runs backwards away from the gain line and just kind of ships quite average passes to the likes of Mata or Mark Bennett or Watson. And it's kind of like, on you go, you know, you're the guy that's going to make something happen. I just feel like that's the thing that Edinburgh are lacking at the moment, that kind of 10 who has that all-round game, who can also add in attack. So no, he didn't have a bad game by any means, but I felt to give him a man of the match was probably the wrong decision. I think that Watson played really well. I think Chris Dean had a better game than him as well, and Blair Kinghorn for that matter. So yeah, bit of an odd decision.
The issue with Hasting as well appeared to be a little bit both in attack and defence. I think you probably let him off for the Doohan miss. How scary did Doohan look carrying that ball in one hand? But you would have expected him, I think, to sort of pick off Charlie Sheil whilst obviously it was like a great run. And yeah, the interesting thing, I was having a wee look in attack and Adam Hastings only passed the ball 13 times, which I guess just, you know, for a 10 in a game that wasn't kind of like, you know, up the jumper stuff, feels like a very sort of low number.
I kind of thought that Glasgow didn't really get much of like a sort of an attacking structure in place at all. And the bits of play that they did, you know, when they got those bits together, they scored their tries. But beyond that, it was a bit scrappy. And that maybe is just due to the fact that they didn't have the territory or the platform to play with. Because even I kind of think of some of their better bits of attack, you know, like Hugh Jones returning the ball quite nicely from fullback. They were more kind of individual bits. And didn't you find, Alan, that Glasgow only made one clean break in the whole game?
Yeah, no, exactly. Versus, Edinburgh, who had seven, which, you know, is historically just not something that you would ever expect. And then I think defenders beaten, I think Edinburgh had about 29, which I think like half of them were Doohan and Charlie Sheil, versus about 11. With Glasgow. So in terms of attacking threat and kind of cutting up your opponent's defence, Edinburgh were vastly superior.
I kind of felt another thing lacking with Glasgow was just the kind of impact in the forwards. Like you know that Harley, Wilson, you know, Cummings and maybe Gray, they're all like, you know, really good, solid all-round players who'll smash rocks all day. They'll make tackles. And I thought Richie Gray had a good game, but it felt like a lot of his contributions were kind of not that material in the context of the game. So it was, you know, making like a semi-passive tackle, which is, you know, so good and it'll look good in the stats, but it didn't feel like there was anyone in the pack. You know, with the exception of maybe the Fagersons, and I thought Kebble carried quite well and Brown's always aggressive, but I think the rest of the pack just didn't really bring enough to the party. Whereas you compare that to, you know, Watson, Mata, who I thought like didn't get a chance to show his offloading ability, but was making meters and taking, you know, it was taking two or three people to take him down whenever he was carrying. And even like when Jamie Hodgson came on, it seemed like someone like him was making more of an impact than a Wilson or Harley, who seemed, you know, fairly anonymous. And particularly when those guys are senior players, you'd expect to stand up.
Jamie Hodgson has put on an awful lot of weight since he was playing, I guess, pre-lockdown. He looked so much bigger when he came on. I don't know if it's just like he's growing or he's just been bulking throughout lockdown, but he looked massive.
There's a few comments floating around that a few players, rather than looking massive in a good way, potentially looking like a little bit massive in a bad way. Just like, I saw a wee comment floated at Nick Grigg, saying he's maybe like putting a few pounds over the lockdown period.
Yeah.
The thing is, they all looked absolutely fucked by the end. I think, there was a few periods of time where there was a lot of like ball in play. And yeah. I actually thought, you know, both teams in moments were trying to sort of play. You know, I know that Edinburgh, I think, sometimes try and play and then remember that like Cockerell's going to give them a bollocking afterwards to sort of revert back to type a little bit. But I actually think in terms of openness, it's probably better than the vast majority of previous 1872 Cup games.
I think I had the same openness as the last game in terms of like the sort of the ambition to play from both sides, but just not quite the execution. So I felt that was sort of the, you know, particularly the second half of the last 1872 game over Christmas, Edinburgh's execution was, you know, like pretty spot on. I do kind of think though that like, particularly for that first half, the referee and his touch charges did just kill any kind of fluidity. And there were a few calls, I think, without wanting to too much, like Christine's pass to Doohan, which was absolutely fine. A couple of breakdown calls that didn't go Glasgow's way as well. I felt sort of made life a bit difficult for both.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sides.
Mike Addison was calling. He seemed to be giving scrum halves an absolute eternity to use the ball at the back of Rucks and Malls. There was one which was sort of like, I think someone on Twitter timed it sort of like 28 seconds from use it to the ball actually being used, which just sort of added to the sort of, I guess, a little bit of frustration with the refereeing performance. Just going to dive into the mailbag quickly, actually. We've got a really good email from Alistair McFadgen fan. That's the mail. That's thethistlerugby@gmail.com if you want to add something in there. He's a Glasgow fan, and he said that this season should be treated like 2010-11 was. Blood the young ones, get them game time, and develop them into hardened professionals. Bain, Flocker, Gordon, McDowell, McLean, Nairn, Nicol, McDonald and Dobie. That's the future of our team. We know we are nowhere good enough to challenge for the title this year, so we should change it up, bleed the new guys under Wilson's guidance and hopefully reap the benefits in a few years. Thanks very much for that. Alistair, Laz, what do you make of that sort of analysis of how Glasgow should tackle, I suppose, the new season when it comes?
So partially agree, but Glasgow did come second last in the 2010-11 season behind Treviso. So I feel like I can see where you're coming from, and I think in sort of certain areas of the team, he's probably correct. I think back row especially, I think you're going to have players like, again, Ferguson, Bruce Flockhart, and then probably Tom Gordon as well, who are either young or don't have a lot of caps that I think longer term it would be beneficial for Glasgow if they get some serious game time this year. However, I think to the point we made last week is you look at that front five and You know, that is a world-class front five with Nakawara to come. So it feels like it's probably a bit of a middle ground between looking at opportunities to sort of blood those youngsters, but then at the same time, you know, Glasgow do still have that base to, I think, be challenging for. They're probably not going to be challenging to win the Pro 14 next year, but they should definitely still be looking at like playoff places.
I think it's interesting with Danny Wilson coming in that, you know, he can almost approach things with a, you know, a fresh pair of eyes and look over that squad and not care to try not to care too much about reputation and the amount of Cats players have got. And, you know, for instance, the fact that he did select Harley Wilson, and the fact that he decided to experiment with Hugh Jones at fullback, you know, that presumably says something about what he thinks about the next cab on the rank. That maybe he doesn't feel like Tom Gordon is quite ready to be a, you know, week in, week out starter. And that, you know, putting in someone like Rufus McLean when, you know, Glasgow did have something to play for, at least, you know, mathematically, isn't the best idea. But maybe now that Glasgow are out of the race, you might see a bit more experimentation. I think on the Doby point, you kind of still got Price and Horn, so there's no rush with him. Robbie Nairn's an interesting one. He never really seems to have had a run of games, whether that's sort of down to form or injury. It would be interesting to see him have a few more shots. But I don't know if it's as simple as just like getting rid of the deadwood, as it were.
You've also got Rufus McLean, obviously, who I still feels more of an idea than an actual thing.
Yeah, agreed. Sort of,
people have seen the sort of 10-minute YouTube video and want it to be something that potentially is not going to be. But again, ultimately, it does feel to your point that Danny Wilson clearly feels like there is a big gap at 15, probably doesn't trust Rufus McLean to take it up. So it's clearly kind of trying to shift Hugh Jones into that position, who admittedly looked relatively comfortable at it.
What did you guys, what did you make of the niggle? Three or four scraps breaking out. Who do you think, what do you think was behind all of that? Just a bit of pent up frustration from lockdown? Or do you think we're actually beginning to see a genuine rivalry emerge between Edinburgh and Glasgow?
A bit of both. I think that, you know, there wasn't much in a lot of it. But, you know, there were a few kind of matchups, like a few points, flash points between like McAnally and Brown, who are obviously competing for positions. I think like Sutherland and Ferguson, even though they play on different sides of the scrum. I don't know. I didn't feel like there was that much in it, really. And you could kind of sense that someone like Ryan Wilson, who's good at that kind of thing, was looking to make a nuisance of himself, but there's only so far that can take you, as opposed to like, you know, him putting in a huge hit or making a good carry. So I don't know, it was a bit frustrating in some respects that like Glasgow seemed a bit more intent on that niggle than Edinburgh, if that's fair.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I think particularly in your point on Ryan Wilson, he did seem much more intent on just those little scraps than getting involved in the game or putting his mark on the game, which I think is a frustration for many. But I think the winners from that are the PR departments and the person who's putting together the montage for this weekend's Edinburgh Glasgow game, because then they've got some really nice sort of fight B-roll to really sort of ham up the rivalry. Shall we look ahead at this weekend, or was there anything else that you want to cover off from the weekend itself?
Nope, nothing else, I think.
So what? So again, Friday Night Lights, 700 people in the crowd at Murrayfield this weekend. You are Danny Wilson, Alan. What changes would you bring for this game? I mean, there is nothing on the line for Glasgow. A bit of pride. Scotland jerseys, I suppose, in the autumn, the theoretical autumn tests at the moment. a bit of pride and a chance to put your hand up for those. What changes would you like to see Glasgow make for this game?
I think there's a few just probably easy changes. I think, again, just bringing kind of George Horn in at nine, kind of switching him and Ali Price around. I do think potentially someone like Bruce Flockhart, who we sort of have had a few opportunities last year and do feel has shown in those moments that, you know, he's someone who is able to kind of compete at that level. I think it'd probably be nice to see him kind of up against, you know, depending on what Glasgow, depending on what Edinburgh put out, it'll still probably be a relatively good high level back row. But to be honest, you know, out with kind of 6 months, it feels like I know there's now going to be another gap for another 2 months, but it feels like for the majority of those players, you still want to keep kind of getting that game time and just kind of taking those opportunities where you can to kind of build up those partnerships, whether it's Richie Gray and Cummings, or, you know, potentially whether it's kind of Jones at fullback with kind of Seymour and Tagive on either side. So to answer your question, not very much.
Yeah, the only thing I would kind of agree in is a bit of a mix up in the back row. Maybe it's interesting. Someone had I saw was tweeting about Bruce Flockhart. His contract still hasn't been renewed yet officially, as far as I'm aware. Which is a bit odd, but yeah, it would just be nice to see like someone like him or Tom Gordon come in, and just, you know, given a bit of free rein to be a bit more destructive, whether that's around the breakdown or carrying. Apart from that, though, you look at the Glasgow bench and there's not too many changes you'd make. The Hugh Jones one is interesting because, you know, I think he did a good job, but I would much rather see him for the good of Scottish rugby running out at 13. And I think that I just don't I still don't see him as a long-term option at 15. So I'd almost rather he was playing in his preferred position at 13, given a run of games there in his best position, and that Glasgow were to try something a bit different at fullback, or at least, you know, stick with something that they could see as a long-term option. The other guy I'd start is this random, like, old guy who came on at prop, Dylan Evans.
That's actually what I was going to say. Who the hell is this guy?
Glasgow snuck that under the radar. They hadn't announced it, and then the first time anyone saw anything of it was as part of their team announcement release.
He made one very great rip of the ball during one piece of the play, but I didn't really notice much else from Dylan.
Yeah, it was a bit odd. But I also thought it was odd that they subbed Kebble, because I thought Kebble was, I don't know enough about scrums. Maybe that was where Glasgow was struggling. It didn't seem that way, but Kebble carried a lot. He seemed to be sort of a quite important point of attack.
I thought Kebble had a good game. I thought his sort of silver hair was quite interesting as well. Wasn't really what I was expecting from him, but I thought he looked good. Scots qualified Ollie Kebble, of course. He is now over the line, as well as Doohan van der Merwe. And I think Jaco van der Vaal is also now residency qualified for Scotland. And we can talk about that in a sec. But what if you're Edinburgh? You are obviously, you've got a semi-final coming up against Ulster the following week, and then you've got a week off, and then you've got a European campaign to try and kick on with. Are you trying to stick with what you've got at the moment, or do you think Richard Cockerill will make a few changes?
I almost feel like Edinburgh have got enough momentum on the back of that that I don't think they will play their strongest team. But then, you know, Edinburgh could rotate their team, and you look at that bench, they could like bring in Taylor, Haining, you know, maybe Bergen, maybe a Willemse hooker. And you never know when sort of like, you know, maybe it's a chance to bring back someone like Richie or Darcy Graham from injury. I'm not sure how long those guys are out for. You can actually still like put out a really decent 15 that you'd still be fairly confident of beating Glasgow. It's maybe also quite a good chance to play, give Nathan Chamberlain a bit of game time, because it seems as if he is going to be the only backup 10. And it's not an ideal situation, but you'd rather going into semi-final against Ulster that he at least had some professional minutes under his belt.
I mean, what I'd like to see both teams doing this weekend is just putting on a bit of a show. It feels like it should be a bit of an exhibition. There's nothing on the line in terms of, I guess, league points or anything like that. But you've got fans in the stadium for the first time. You're sort of trying to make it an exciting event for people. The last thing you want to happen is to sort of just go off without a shot. So it'd be great to see, I guess, both teams sort of embracing that and picking sort of young, exciting teams that they can. And I guess just adding to the points you're making on Edinburgh there, I mean, bringing those guys back from injury. Edinburgh were missing players like Darcy Graham, Jamie Ritchie, Magnus Bradbury, Ben Toulis, and Henry Purgis, all sort of seasoned internationals. So they are, you know, that depth that we were talking about earlier is looking really, really strong.
I kind of see where you're coming from, but then at the same time, going into kind of the semi-final and the final, there's part of me that would like love to see like just a really composed, very Edinburgh performance. Just because it just feels like if you have like a really open game where they're just almost like exhibitioning it, that it's just not particularly going to help Edinburgh going into that semi-final and final where, you know, you expect against Ulster. I think they're probably going to tighten up quite a lot. So whilst I get from a sort of visual perspective or enjoyment kind of neutral perspective, having that kind of sort of game would be fun. It feels like for the success of Edinburgh, them just kind of almost like doing a very dominant kind of classic Edinburgh performance is the best way to go.
Okay, Anne. That sounds great.
Just want like, you know, like,
look, I completely and like, utterly understand and agree with everything you've just said, but also, come on, let the boys play.
Maybe like 16-9, just grind it down, maybe one pushover try. Just really get them prepped for Ulster.
You just love misery. You're like, you want like a gritty, pouring with wet rain Friday night. Really test them.
It's all they need, though, if they're going to beat Leinster in the final.
Well, we've talked about it enough. What do you think is going to happen on Friday night? Matt, I'll come to you first.
I think even if Edinburgh change their side quite a lot, I still think they'll have enough to beat Glasgow. Glasgow might give a few kind of fringe or young players a shot. So I think Edinburgh, same predictions last week, Edinburgh by 10 and 12.
I didn't realise it was Friday night until you just said it. I've committed to doing something on Friday night, so I'm not sure I can watch the game. I thought it was on Saturday. But yeah, I still stick 16-9, grind it out, Grant Gilchrist try.
Grant Gilchrist try. Well, that is, you'll probably get about 30-1 on Grant Gilchrist scoring at any time for that. I'm going to stick with my sort of Murrayfield Globetrotters prediction, and it's going to be 45-39 to Glasgow with a Jamie Dobie hat trick. And that is what the fans want to see.
That would be great.
That would be wild. Right. We will see. We'll be back next week, or at least Alan and I will be back next week. Matt will be sunning himself. So we will be back to you next week. But before you head off, I've got another quiz. I've got some more Scottish rugby players for you to guess how many clubs they've played for. So if you weren't with us last week, I'll just quickly recap the rules. I'll give Matt and Alan the name of a Scottish rugby player and the number of clubs that they've played for, and then they will sort of bid to talk to say how many of those clubs that they can name, and then the winner will be the person that can name them. So, Scottish rugby legend Scott Murray has played for 6 clubs. Alan, you went first last week, so Matt, you can go first this week. How many clubs of Scott Murray can you name?
That's a tough one. I'm going to go 4.
I can't do
5,
sorry. So I'll let you go.
Let's have your 4 then, Matt. I thought that was quite a punchy bid.
Okay, so I think he started at Bedford.
Correct.
Saracens.
Correct.
Edinburgh.
Correct.
I know he played in France. I think it was Cast.
Correct. That is very impressive. Well done.
Are the other two Montauban?
Montauban is correct.
And Newcastle?
No, there's another French team, Stade Montois, Montois, who I'd never heard of. Wow, 1-0 to Matt. Well done.
Oh, they're Mont-de-Marsan, I think. Different name.
Possibly. Well, a very good start from Matt there, 1-0 up. The second player, legend of the game, Daryl Marfo. He's played for 6 clubs. How many Daryl Marfo's clubs have you got? Alan, to you. There's a lot of loan spells.
Did you say 6 total?
6 total.
For some reason, I think Hanny can get 5, but I'll say 4.
All right, Matt.
I'll call Alan on that. I think I've got 4. I've not got 5.
So, Edinburgh,
yeah.
Bath,
yeah.
Ospreys, and yeah. Harlequins.
Correct. In fact, it's actually 7 clubs because Ospreys wasn't on his Wikipedia, but Ospreys is correct. So, the
London Welsh?
London, 25 appearances for London Welsh. And then 2 loan spells during his time at Harlequins. He played once for London Scottish and 4 times for Ealing.
What a man, what a career.
There you go. So that's 1-1 hotting up here. Let's go for another man in the headlines tonight. Sam Hidalgo-Klein has scored for Exeter in their win against Bristol Bears tonight. It is a great try. Check it out on our Twitter account. He's played for 6 clubs, including one which I just gave you, which you both agreed to go anyway. 6 clubs, Sam Hidalgo-Klein.
I'm going to go 6.
Oh! Go on then.
Well, I can't outbid, so.
I have not really thought about them too much. So, Edinburgh?
Yes.
Scarlets?
Correct.
Harlequins, Lyon, Racing 92, Exeter.
Boom. All 6.
Yes.
That was pretty good.
It's not too bad, actually, because he's moved so recently that when you get one, it's like a kind of domino effect.
Yeah. So that is 2-1 to Matt. Alan, coming back to you for a bid on Nathan Hines, 5 clubs.
With 3.
Matt, have you got 4?
Yeah, I think I've got 4.
4 will give you the win, a 3-1 victory. Go on, Alan, have you got 5?
Yeah, Alan's got 5.
I'm going to assume Alan's not got 5.
I've really screwed this up because I think I could get 4, but I just don't think I can get 5. So no.
That's so tactically flawed. Go on then, Matt.
Edinburgh, Perpignan.
Yep.
Clermont.
Yeah.
Sale?
Sorry, say that again.
Who did you say?
Sale.
Sale Sharks is correct.
Yeah.
You missed, I guess, the bigger one of Leinster.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Leinster was his fifth club. So, Matt, a big win for you, 3-1, bouncing back after a 4-1 horsing last week.
Couldn't let that stand.
What was the fifth one?
The fifth one is you're one of Scottish rugby's greatest sons, Dan Parks, four clubs.
All in the Northern Hemisphere?
All in the Northern Hemisphere. Well, I'm just looking at his Wikipedia. There's a footnote that says correct as of 10th of May 2014. Can't imagine there was many changes since then, but Dan Parks' wiki needs a bit of an update.
I've got the three.
Yeah, I've got three.
Glasgow, Connacht, Cardiff.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the year 2001, he made six appearances for another club.
Country?
England. And it used to be quite popular for a Scottish exile. Leeds Tykes.
Ah, interesting.
He played six games and scored 51 points for Leeds. It's actually a pretty decent return.
was that in the championship, really?
It may well have been. In 2001, I'm not sure what they were in. Also reading Dan Parks' Wikipedia, did you know that in 2016 he was on the books as Samoa's skills coach?
Didn't know that. I did know that, to be fair.
Oh, did you?
I did know
fair
that.
Fair play. Well, there you go. Well,
you don't get paid for that, though, do you?
No. We'll do obscure skills jobs for Dan Parks another day, because he had two other coaching appointments. But I don't think we need to go into those. Right, let's call that a day. Thank you very much for joining us again. We are now back into weekly pods and weekly newsletters, so you can get your absolute fill of us. Subscribe, give us a review. Reviews really help us out on iTunes in particular, so please get on there and let us know what you think about the pod. You can follow us on Twitter @ThistleRugbyPod, on Instagram @Thistle_Rugby_Pod. Get your emails read out on the pod by writing into thethistlerugby@gmail.com and subscribe to the newsletter. That is Substack, Substack, and type in Thistle Rugby Podcast and you will find us. Subscribe to the newsletter and we will be in your inbox every Monday morning. But for now, peace.
See ya.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.